from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Welcome to STRAT. And I think this is the first STRAT I've done, at least in a while, where I'm recording it while I'm overseas. I'm actually on the other side of the planet right now doing some work. And I'm going to basically cover one big issue. I don't know about key issues, but one big issue, which is the U.S. military has been deployed to Los Angeles. And when I say that, certainly carries a lot of heavy weight. Although with that said, it's not the first time that the U.S. military has been deployed to Los Angeles to deal with protests, riots, whatever you want to say. If you want to go back to 1992, the Rodney King riots that took place, the military was deployed extensively. The Marine Corps was deployed. The National Guard was federalized. They were basically providing security for law enforcement throughout the region and throughout the area. So this is not the first time we've seen something like this. And if you go back historically, there's lots of precedents for the military being used in these security type missions. So anyway, let me talk to you about what this is and talk about what's going on in Los Angeles and what the National Guard troops are there for and what the Marines are there for and what their status is overall. So let's get into the purpose for sending federal troops. What started it all was very aggressive immigration enforcement. Basically, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which includes the Homeland Security investigations. It also includes a lot of other folks that are strictly ICE, but also they were being bolstered, my understanding is, by other federal law enforcement that were augmenting what they were doing. We're basically conducting a series of raids, going into a variety of different places, workplaces. I understand they were actually picking up people outside of courtrooms. That was interesting. Just every place you could think of. And I don't know if it was true, but there was certainly a fear that they were hanging out outside of schools, picking up illegal immigrant, and they were alluding to immigrant children, but I'm not sure if any of that is actually factual because there's so much overblown rhetoric with this, it's really tough to separate out what's real and what's not. But what it was is a nationwide sweep going after illegal immigrants. Initially, certainly candidate Donald Trump had talked about going after illegal immigrant criminals, those who had committed crimes in the United States, and deporting them. And certainly that was very popular because he won the election. But more recently, they've said, hey, look, crossing into the United States is a crime, which I think technically it probably is. You're not supposed to cross the United States. And I would point out that every sovereign nation in the world retains the right to limit the number of people who and how many can come into their country from other countries. That kind of goes with the basic concept of sovereignty, which is you own that soil, if you will. That is your sovereign nation, and you can control what comes into your nation. And so this is not some strange thing talking about limiting or restricting immigration into the U.S., nor is it a strange thing to say those who came here without legal authorization should have to leave. That these are well-established things under international law for any sovereign nation. So it's not really a wild concept in and of it. The thing that makes it a little bit different is that we have such a large illegal immigrant population. By some counts, it's about 11 million illegal immigrants, and they are folded well into the economy, into society. You see, mostly doing things like, I grew up as a farmer in the Central Valley of California. Yes, I can't say that I know it for a fact, but I would say that a lot of the folks out there doing agricultural work were probably not here legally, okay? It is, and with that said, back then, immigration was pretty busy up in the Central Valley. They would roll up during picking season especially, and they would be doing all kinds of things, all right? Their green trucks are rather infamous up in the Central Valley. So yes, that is going on. And so what happened was they were doing these raids, and as they were doing these raids, they were being met by, one could say, protests. They were actually being met by more than that. There were people throwing things at them, basically obstructing their ability to conduct these raids. Some of it was more violent than other things, but this grew into larger protests across the board and more violent confrontations. In some cases, people throwing bricks at passing federal law enforcement vehicles, which is very dangerous, potentially lethal. And so that's one thing. But also we saw them setting cars on fire, setting what looked like Waymo cars on fire. I don't know what the anger is with driverless cars, other than the fact that they tend to be very cautious in traffic, and it is Los Angeles, and anybody who's cautious in traffic in Los Angeles could cause the ire of others around them. I'm just saying. But yes, there was stuff that was going on that presented a security problem. The other issue is that Los Angeles, a number of cities in California, and the state has always, I don't know if they currently do, but they had taken a position of being what they call sanctuary. In other words, that law enforcement was not going to actively seek out the immigration status of those they encounter. In fact, they would deliberately ignore the immigration status of those they encounter. So basically, they would not enforce immigration law. As I understand it legally, they don't have to, or at least there's some ambiguity in that they have to enforce all the federal laws. I think that's gone to the Supreme Court, and there is a little gray area there which says you don't have to actually go out there and actively enforce every federal law. And that sounds reasonable because there are a ton of federal laws. In fact, once you get into the area of federal law enforcement, and I wasn't a federal law enforcement officer or special agent, although I worked with them for many years side by side, and I will tell you, there are a ton of laws, and there is no way that anybody could remember all the federal laws and stuff that have to be enforced. So I can understand where they might not. But this one was pretty much a bold face up front saying, no, we're not. Now, there's a good reason why. The reason why they weren't enforcing this was they said, look, we have a large illegal immigrant population here. We need them to call in when there's crimes. We need them to talk to us when there's criminal activity going on. We need them to be witnesses. And if the first thing we do when we show up is ask for their immigration status, they're going to quit calling us. And pretty soon, they're not going to call us when crimes are happening. They're not going to be witnesses when crimes are happening. And it's going to make our job of public safety that much more difficult. And that's why Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, a number of cities across the country have chosen to be sanctuary cities. However, if your job is immigration enforcement on the federal level, that makes your life very tough. Now, I will say, having worked very closely with LAPD, LA County Sheriffs, and others for many years, that if a federal law enforcement agent from any federal law enforcement agency was being attacked and called for backup, I have no doubt that they would immediately respond and help them out. However, if you're planning a big raid like this, I don't know that LAPD and LA sheriffs would position themselves to be part of that larger operation, because that is the optic that LAPD, LA sheriffs, the city of Los Angeles, the county of Los Angeles, the state want to avoid. They do not want to be seen as immigration enforcement agents. Yes, response, sure. Proactively setting up a security situation, probably not so much, and that's one of the issues there. So, another thing I need to point out, that gets to what status they were in. Now, Governor Newsom has been talking about, I did not request this assistance. Mayor Bass says, I did not request this assistance. If they were requesting federal assistance, like with the disaster, like with the fires or anything like that, which they're very familiar with, okay, they would send a request up the chain. It would get passed from the state over to the federal side. And on the federal side, they would decide if federal military assets, should be brought in to provide assistance. There's a lot of criteria for that. I used to work that. I know that criteria. I was in that chain of basically evaluating whether that was a legit request for military support. That's how that process goes. This is not that process. There is another thing. It's called federal to federal. This is where a federal agency or federal agencies request military support. There is a lot of precedence for this. You may recall that we had a space shuttle that broke up coming into the atmosphere some years back. Actually, many years back. It was a couple of decades back. And the debris and, tragically, the remains were spread out over multiple states. NASA was the federal agency responsible for the space shuttle. All right, so NASA requested that the military provide assistance. The military was out there for months. I think it may have gone over a year looking for debris in multiple states. They were going onto public property, private property, doing all sorts of stuff. They weren't doing law enforcement, but they were very busy doing that. That's a federal thing. If you want to go back to the 90s, U.S. Postal Service was having its postal parcels robbed on a regular basis. They were having their facilities robbed on a regular basis, and it got so bad, they decided to actually call in the Marines. And the Marines actually provided security for the U.S. Postal Service. So this federal-to-federal thing is not something that does not happen. Okay, so what is the role and mission of them? Despite all the rhetoric, I don't know why the president of the White House was talking about quelling the riots. I'm not sure, since none of the military personnel came in direct contact with the rioters, I'm not sure how they were quelling any riots. But what they are doing is they're providing security to federal facilities and to federal personnel. And that is a mission that the military can do. That does not require the invocation of the Insurrection Act. That is a separate issue. The Insurrection Act is actually something that could be invoked, but that's saying that law and order has broken down. Basically, one time it could have clearly been invoked was in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. It was very clear New Orleans PD and all the other law enforcement out there had basically lost control of the situation. And President Bush decided not to invoke it because it was a Democratic governor, a Democratic mayor, and he did not want to be seen basically inserting federal troops to regain law and order on the streets of New Orleans in that political environment. So he held off. Historians can debate whether that was the right decision or wrong decision, but that was a case where many would say he could have done that and he would have been fully within his rights. Los Angeles is not in that situation right now. That law and order is not broken down. LAPD, LA Sheriffs, all the other law enforcement agencies appear to be very capable in maintaining things on the streets, although there are protests and there is some vandalism and some other activities going on. All right, so we've talked about all this stuff. Now, many see sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, sanctuary counties, whatever, as an affront to federal authority. And to some extent, they're probably right. There's a clear political reason why, and many of them have said that over and over again. Basically, it's politics. That's why they don't want to do it. Aside from everything I just talked about earlier, where you want to get the cooperation and stuff, there are some very partisan politics in immigration. Let's just be honest about it. And President Trump is playing hardball. He ran an election. He said he was going to do something about this, and he is doing it. All right. Now, the Army National Guard is in federal status. They are a reserve component of whatever they are. Now, part of the Guard is Army, part of the Guard is Air Force. In a couple of states, a teeny weeny piece is actually Navy, but I don't want to get into that. But most of them are Army or Air Force. These guys are Army. They are a reserve component of the Army. You want to go back to World War II? They were there. They were fighting for the federal government, all right? World War I, I'm pretty sure they were there. They were fighting for the federal government. Spanish-American War, we really didn't have a National Guard back then, but we had state militias, and they were there. My great-grandfather was part of the Iowa State Militia that went over to the Philippines in the Spanish-American War, all right? They wasn't fighting for Iowa. He wasn't under the control of the governor of Iowa. He was federal, all right? War on Terror, we had tons of National Guard going to Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere around the world. Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, was National Guard, and he was in federal status overseas, involved with warfighting missions. So, look, they are federal. They are not owned by the state. If they're not being used in their federal status, the governor can use them for various exigent situations like disaster relief, support, whatever it is. That's perfectly permissible, all right, unless they're called up by the federal government. But honestly, the federal government does have the right, first right of refusal, if you will. Okay, because they pay for everything with those guys. So basically, they're a federal reserve asset that the governor can use on occasion is probably the best way to look at it. Although that has been confused over the many years, and I'm sure some National Guard would say, oh, no, we're not this. And I'd say, fine, then how about you not take any federal money and just pay for it with state money, and let's have that discussion then, in which case the room would get eerily quiet if we ever were to talk about that. So they're in federal status. Now, can the president federalize them? Absolutely. And I'll give you a direct thing, and this goes to civil rights. You may recall that Governor George Wallace, a racist, segregationist, white supremacist, did not like the Supreme Court's rulings on integrating schools, did not want to allow African-American students to go to the University of Alabama. Students were being escorted by U.S. Marshals, all right, or I should say deputy marshals, to go onto the campus, and he called out the National Guard of Alabama to stand in front of the school to physically stop those deputy U.S. marshals and those African-American students from getting onto the campus and going to school. And President Kennedy turned around and federalized the National Guard in Alabama. And the general in charge reportedly turned to the governor and said, "Sir, sorry, I no longer work for you." And the National Guard stood aside and they let the students and the deputy U.S. marshals on the campus. That was a very pointed use of the power of federalization. Obviously, the governor of Alabama didn't like it. Now, if Gavin Newsom wants to say that he is simpatico with George Wallace, that would be an interesting political statement. But yes, presidents have been used federalization for a variety of means. Now, as I mentioned, they have also done a variety of security missions across the board. Federal troops have been used for a variety of things. For example, when under Reagan, when the air traffic controllers went on strike, he fired them and brought in federal air traffic controllers, military air traffic controllers to control air traffic, civilian air traffic around the U.S. Yes, there were legal battles with that and everything else, but as it turns out, it was legal. So there's a lot of missions the military is allowed to do. Okay, so people are probably wondering about Posse Comitatus. That's the law of 1878. Why did it come about? Ulysses S. Grant, the president, couldn't rely on local law enforcement, state or local law enforcement, in any of the former Confederate states to basically abide by the law of the land. They were still, they wanted to kind of de facto keep things the way they were before they lost the Civil War. And so what he would do is he would send down federal military troops, and many of them were already down there because, well, the Union defeated the Confederacy, and they would basically act in a law enforcement function to make sure that these laws ending things like racial discrimination and stuff like that, I don't think all racial discrimination was ended under Reconstruction, but that these basic laws, these legal changes that ended slavery, gave African Americans the right to vote, etc., that these things were being enforced. The Confederate states did not like that. And eventually they built up a coalition of like-minded senators and congressmen, to include some Northerners with questionable political consciousness, that voted for the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878. And it was basically to stop this use of federal military troops for law enforcement, which was basically stopping racial discrimination, by any other term, in the former Confederate states. All right. So it didn't really come out. There was no higher purpose with Posse Comitatus. There were no civil libertarians out there that said, "Oh, we have to stop this." No, the reason it was stopped was because these former Confederate states didn't like these federal troops coming in and forcing them to obey the law. So that's actually where they came about. Anyway, it is still the law of the land that federal troops cannot be used for law enforcement, with the exception of the Insurrection Act. Now, the Insurrection Act means that things have fallen apart. And I talked about one example. There was some talk after 9/11 of basically rescinding Posse Comitatus. It was never done, but there was some talk about that. But Posse Comitatus is but one law. And I should mention that in California, if the National Guard was in state status, on state active duty, using state funding, they would be working for the governor. And as I have seen it, or I believe it's still the same way, statutorily in California, they could still do federal law enforcement, or not federal, I'm sorry. They could still do law enforcement. They could actually do peace officer type stuff as National Guard members under state status. Once they get federalized, they can't do that. That's why in 1992, once the National Guard was federalized, they stopped doing all those types of missions, and all they could do was basically support and security missions, but they could not do anything like law enforcement. They couldn't go out there. They could back up LAPD or any other law enforcement agency in dealing with rioters and looters and stuff, but they could not take a lead presence. They were simply a backup force and essentially providing security for law enforcement doing that law enforcement mission for the most part. And there's some parameters on that. There's another thing though. There's the U.S. Economy Act. And when I was working this, two things you always looked at. One, are we violating Posse Comitatus? And two, are we violating the U.S. Economy Act of 1932? I actually had to do some schooling on this way back when because I really wasn't that familiar with the act. And this was something that was enacted by Congress in 1932. This is right before Roosevelt was elected as president. And this was dealing with the Depression and using public funds and public works, if you will, to rekindle the economy to get things going. There was fear within Congress that what could happen is that all this money that was being spent on this could be spent just within the government, within the federal government. And one of the fears was that, okay, you want to go build a dam? Okay, go hire the Army Corps of Engineers to go build a dam. You want to build a road? Go hire the Army to build a road. You want to go build something else? Hire the Army to go do that. And the reality is, yes, the Army could have done all those things. Wouldn't have been the most economical thing because basically military units are extremely expensive. They come with a lot of additional parts that you don't need for this. And there are commercial sources of this stuff, which are far more economical. Sources of goods, sources of services, it just makes more sense. So they literally, written law says that the federal government, when it's looking at doing stuff like that, has to look at the most economical source of goods and services. Okay, so what does that mean for what we're seeing here? If they keep these federal troops on active duty for an extended period of time on the security mission, at some point, someone has to look at the U.S. Economy Act and make a decision. Now, actually, any of the cabinet secretaries, as I read the act, could turn around and waiver that and ignore it altogether, all right? There could be legal challenges to those waivers, but they could waiver it and it could be looked at. But what I will tell you is this, that California has a history where California state agencies, one in particular, the governor's office of emergency services, is federally designated, federally empowered, federally funded. It gets a portion of the federal funds that comes in to run its operations and actually uses its delegated federal authority across state lines in certain areas. It's a rather unusual thing that can happen. And in that, they have repeatedly refused to abide by any federal regulations or guidelines that go back to the U.S. Economy Act. So even though they're an instrumentality of a federal agency supporting a federal program involving federal funding, they have actually gone back many times and said, we do not recognize that law applies to us. And I find that rather interesting, and I'm sure if there's courtroom things that come out of this, which there will be, and I would be shocked if California doesn't. In fact, they've already said they're pursuing legal action against the Trump administration on this. If that comes up and they look at the two big bodies of law, one being Posse Comitatus, the other being the U.S. Economy Act, that deal with this sort of stuff, I have no doubt that there will be a very interesting legal discussion because of California's rather unique situation or unique legal position regards anything tied to that. I'm not quite sure where this will all fall out, but it is interesting. And because that will bring that up, it could bring up a bigger thing. This is just dealing with immigration reform. One of the things the Trump administration has talked about is withholding federal funding from the state of California. I don't think that President Trump could just turn around and say, I'm stopping all federal funding coming from the state of California. However, if he found something that the state was doing or a court decision that the state was using to not abide by federal law involving how they are supposed to use those funds, receive those funds, etc., that would be different. And I think that the state is going to have to look at what it's doing because this may be, I don't say four-dimensional chess, but there may be another side of this which actually has much bigger implications for the state. And I'll just leave that at that. So with all that said, very dynamic discussion. Didn't plan when usually I talk about war, terrorism, things, big conflicts around the world. I didn't plan on this being all about the county and city of Los Angeles, but this is something I used to do. I am something of a expert, if you will, on this. I have taught numerous National Guard, federal military, state of California state officials, other public servants, the private sector. I've even taught this for the U.S. government to foreign military when they come here to learn how we do things. So I've been teaching this for many years, and I felt it was something that needed to be talked about because it's very much in the news. Thanks for listening to Strat, and also please visit stratpodcast.com. You can go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kempfer TV, or you can go to my website, or I should say the corporate website for Global Risk Intelligence and Planning, which is gripsa.com, and hopefully you'll get a chance to listen to more of these and enjoy this Strat podcast recorded overseas.